Welcome to the first episode of the Blazer Banter podcast. I'm Eric Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for the Columbian. And today I'm joined by Indianapolis Star beat writer Candace Buckner. Of course, Candace was my predecessor here at the Columbian. She used to cover the Blazers as well. So we talk Pacers, Blazers, and a little bit of Twitter as well. So I hope you enjoy the first of what we hope will be many episodes of the Blazer Banter podcast. Friend Candace Buckner, how are you?
I'm doing great, Eric. I'm used to being on TV, so I should stop acting like I need to look up and smile and stuff. I can just continue drinking my bottled water and enjoy life. It's going great, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Fantastic start
to the podcast too.
Yeah, I stumbled over Indiana and Indianapolis a couple times, but
who doesn't?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tongue twister of sorts, but how's the season been treating you? West Coast road trip. I think you guys were in Phoenix last night. Tell us a little bit about one thing that I'm going to try and do on this podcast is have a guest that relates to a team that the Blazers are playing on that given week. It just so happens that they're playing the Pacers tomorrow, or I guess on Thursday when this will go up, it'll be today. Tell us about, how the Pacers season has gone. Obviously, there was a lot of stuff that happened in the summer.
Yeah. Well, everybody knows about Paul George breaking his leg during the USA. That's the thing that always gets me. The USA scrimmage, not a game. We're not talking about a game here. We're talking an inter-squad scrimmage. And to his credit, he was giving it I wouldn't say his all, but giving it some effort, and tried to play some defense and broke his leg by running into the stanchion. So that wasn't the end of it. That was just the beginning, because after Paul, and they had already lost Lands to free agency, training camp started and the players just started dropping like flies. George Hill had a left knee contusion, which turned out to be a quad tear. David West had a severely sprained ankle, so severe that at his age, and he's my age. He's not a young guy, mm-hmm. In basketball years, but I like to think that we're still young in human years. But he was thinking that that could have been even worse for his career. It was that bad, and so he missed the first 15 games. Then you had C.J. Watson, who missed the first 15 games, and he's the backup point guard. So players are just dropping like flies, and they rolled out a roster that was befitting of a D-League team. However, they actually found some good wins in Dallas, in Chicago, and in Miami. So this team plays hard. They're just not very talented at this point. Roy Hibbert and David West are back. I forgot Roy Hibbert had an injury. Some of their starters are back. It's just they just don't have a lot in the reserve all around to really compete night in and night out.
Yeah. I guess that speaks for itself that, there's been so many injuries you forgot, one of the bigger players, more important players on the team. But
freaking two-time All-Star, too.
Yeah. Roy. But I saw that David West has come back at the last three games or so. Is he still trying to find a little bit of a rhythm, or is he on a minutes restriction?
No, not at all. He's he got some work in while they were on their last road trip, the little Texas two-step before Thanksgiving. Good thing with him is, his game translates very well from 24 to 34. So his mid-range game, and he can play facilitator at that post, or he can back a guy down, or he can just, take that 15-footer, which is kind of like a layup for him. So his game translates well. I haven't seen much rust. I will say this, the crazy thing about it, Hibbert and West played together for the first time yesterday against the Suns. I'm sorry, Tuesday against the Suns. And, you know, Wes probably had his worst game in three games. And I'm trying to put two and two together, thinking like, whoa, the front court is back intact. You know, why did he look so meh? Mm-hmm. But it just takes time, and it's going to take him time to gel back with that formation. But he has not looked rusty. I'll say that. It's just going to take time for them to look cohesive.
You know, I'm looking here at the team so far, and I had heard some stuff about him. I think I saw you wrote about him a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit about Solomon Hill? He started every game, played a lot of minutes. He's only 23.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about him, his backstory a little bit.
All right. Well, you know, those 4-year seniors, I have a feeling that, Larry Bird and the Pacers really like those guys. They come out because they're seasoned, and they play the 4 years, and most of them graduate, and they come out just a little bit more mature than your classic rookie. And they just took a guy, Shane Whittington, didn't draft him, but they signed him after his senior season at, I think it was Western Michigan. But Solomon Hill was that guy, and he was that guy last year. He puts on a good face, I'll say that. When he has to talk to us, when he has to appear as the mature young man to people who are the decision makers and his fate. So I think, you know what, he has a good basketball IQ. So I'll give him that. It's just night in, night out, they have him on the best wing perimeter score. And he, as much as they like to talk, that you know, he's growing in confidence on this end and on that end. You know, he's still 23, and this is basically his rookie year because he did not play at all last year. So he's learning. He's I just feel like at 23 years old, this is what you can expect from him. He's going to take his lumps, but he's doing all right.
Yeah, and it seems like
I sound very excited about he's doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at his numbers, and I guess that would reflect the exact kind of reaction that you're giving. Is I mean, just only basing it off that. Obviously, that's not everything, but I mean, it seems that he can provide some good things, and you know, and then he still needs to work on a lot of other things.
Yeah, but you know, if this wasn't Bizarro season, he would be the third guy, and I don't think he would be getting time at all.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, here he is starting.
Right.
Every game.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, obviously with the young guys, and you never, it's, you know, people always try, we a lot of times have to try and, you know, maybe color a certain situation where guys go down as like, oh, it could be a blessing in disguise and all this stuff. Yeah. But, you know, for, you know, a team like, you know, Indiana, I feel like last year they didn't play. It was kind of like the Blazers where they had like five guys that played and a lot of minutes.
Exactly.
And it's to see, you know, these guys that haven't really been playing a lot to get a lot of minutes. I mean, Copeland didn't even really play that much at all last year, right?
Not at all. And fans were clamoring for him because every time he got in, he would just, you know, make threes. But now that he's getting time, we're seeing why he wasn't playing last year, because he can be so inconsistent outside of the catch and shoot. His catch and shoot game.
Uh-huh.
When he is behind the arc and he doesn't have to put the ball on the floor, you know, Chris Copeland is a weapon. However, he needs playmakers around him. He needs facilitators. And if he doesn't have those guys, then God bless us all, he has to be the facilitator and the creator.
Man.
And that's not a good sign. I like his game, and I like that he tries to be more than a shooter. And he'll tell you, you know, I'm a scorer. I can post and do all this good stuff. No, he will say that, and that's just his confidence talking, and he has to have that, or somebody has to believe in himself, so it might as well be him. But when he puts the ball on the floor, the percentage drops at least 70% that he's going to make that shot. So if he was on the floor with a Paul George or even a Lance Stevenson to space, you know, that's his role.
Mm-hmm.
He would be killing, but you know that he's asked to do a little bit more now because, you know, there's no Paul, there's no Lance Stephenson. There are very few creators. Rodney Stuckey, and I'm sorry to be so long-winded. Rodney Stuckey, I would say, is pound for pound their best creator and athlete on the court, but he creates for himself.
And he was injured for some time too, wasn't he?
Exactly. Various injuries or various soreness with his foot. So he was in and out. And in the very beginning, you know, he was able to like be really crazy efficient in a very short amount of time because they were saving him. And there were some times when he would be able to just, you know, dish and I'm sorry, drive and dish. But now, since he's been back, he's been in the starting lineup and he's just been the Rodney Stuckey of Detroit. There's really nothing wrong because they need somebody to be that aggressive. However, they have very few playmakers on and around that roster.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, I mean, they had C.J. Watson got hurt too. So that's, you know, your backup point guard. And yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of creators. I mean, with Paul George being out, I mean, that obviously it hurts. I mean, I'm gonna ask this just because I'm sure you've been asked it before. And is there any chance that Paul George comes back this year? I mean, I saw that he was like walking around in media day and a lot of, you know, but you know.
Yeah, we're fourth into the season, I say, almost a fourth into the season. He's not doing anything at this point.
Okay.
When those videos go viral of him, you know, either playing with his dog, he was shooting hoops with his dog, or he does around the world. He does nothing previous to that. You guys have to put that in context. He's not practicing. Heck, he's not even running up and down the court. He's doing nothing. He has his rehabilitation that's taking up his time. Whenever he's dressed in his, you know, Pacers gear, he's away doing his rehabilitation, whether that's on the treadmill or some very light work in the pool, but he's doing nothing on the court. So right now we're in December and he passes the eye test, but he's not close to even getting back to basketball, you know, becoming a basketball player. So he's not on the court. When you see him shooting, and like I witnessed it today, they practiced at Portland State University, and this is his first time traveling with the team. So when he got hungry, he left practice, walked around the campus with his pal George Hill, and they stayed outside and ate their food and then went back in and just watched practice from the stands. But when practice was over, oh, he's the first one on the court to shoot around the world and just get on the court and shoot. I mean, that's great. I know he's anxious, but long answer, no, I don't think he's coming back. He's so far away, it's not even funny. But he passes the oh my gosh, he can still shoot, he still has it. And I was sitting next to a scout in Phoenix saying the exact same thing, like, wow, he looks really good. Looks are deceiving.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, what happens when, like you're saying, people see those viral videos of him walking around at media day or playing with his dog, like you say, and everyone's like, oh man, you know, he has to come back. I mean, yeah, I think sometimes, yeah, I mean, obviously with an injury that gruesome, you wouldn't expect him to be back on the court assuming basketball activities.
Watch him come back in January and make me look like an idiot. That won't happen. The thing with Paul is, he just needs to get back on the court first to do very simple things. And it doesn't seem like he's doing that consistently because the injury won't allow it. So again, at what, he's 24 years old. He's quite the impatient young man as anybody would be in that situation, but he just has a long journey ahead of him.
Yeah. Understandable. But, I saw that, you know, also, one of the other things that happened in the off season for the Pacers, that wasn't a complete like disaster, I suppose, was that they gave Coach Vogel an extension. And I mean, what do you think so far? I mean, you're talking about the roster that they've had to put out there with this bizarro season.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that says about his job as a coach, you know, still getting them to some good wins against, you know, against, like you said, against Dallas and Chicago and Miami as well?
Yeah. You know what? They're 7-11 right now. And I was, when they gave him the extension, I asked Larry Bird, why not wait to see how the season turns out? And he, in his very Larry Bird fashion, told me why not, or I forgot his response, but it wasn't. He was taking no suggestion from me as far as how he should run his club. However, at 7-11 with road wins in Dallas, Chicago, and Miami, Vogel has done. He's not going to win it, but Vogel has done a job where he should get somebody's vote, at least maybe second place, third place for Coach of the Year. At this point, if the season ends today, of course it's not. He deserves some recognition for what he's doing with this roster. This roster, when you look at it, I don't see how it's so much better than what the Lakers have, what Minnesota has. They are better than the Sixers. However, they should be at the bottom of the league with all that they for a spell, they had their all five starters who stepped on the court in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They were gone. They were either injured or, in Lance's case, in another uniform. So he was playing with a completely different team, and not just their backups. He's playing with third string guys. The guys who Solomon Hill, who was sent to the D League last year. The guys who, like Donald Sloan, who played in the Philippines not too long ago. So he's doing this 7-11 type job, and they could be much better. I can say that because they lost some horrendous games to like Boston, and golly, who was that other one that they should have definitely won? Milwaukee. However, this guy has done a heck of a job. Frank Vogel, I shouldn't have thought, hey, let's wait till the end of the season, Pacers, let's see if this guy can really draw some X's and O's when he doesn't have a superstar. But you know what? He's done exactly that. He's been a great coach, and he has a great staff. Dan Burke is from Portland. Nate McMillan, who is a former Portland Trailblazers coach, but Frank deserves a lot of kudos and credit for what he's doing thus far.
I mean, record, and I think a lot of people, when Lance went to Charlotte, expected that Charlotte would be a lot better than they are.
And they're not exactly in Charlotte, another team besieged by injuries. But look at them. They are the biggest disappointment, or one of the biggest disappointments in the NBA. And Lance is not fit in Steve Clifford's system. I don't want to be one of those people like, I called it from the beginning. But when he signed, I remember saying and tweeting, good luck operating that system when Kemba dominates the ball. And Al Jefferson and the offense runs to Al Jefferson. So where does that leave Lance, who needs the ball in his hands? But he made Vogel while Lance was there. He made a home for Lance and made him succeed to the point where he was desirable to the Hornets. And now, according to Zach Lowe, they could possibly look to trade him because he's not panning out. So Vogel is not only a great, and I think he got a lot of credit for just being a motivator and just a player's coach. They love him, they really do. But he's more than that. He's also a good he's an intelligent guy, but he's also just a good coach.
I mean, I see here that, as we've said over and over again, and it will be said over and over again about the Pacers this year. But I mean, the fact that they have, according to, I'm looking at Basketball Reference right now, they have a top 10 defense. And I mean, without Paul George and Lance, who were their two best perimeter defenders,
And give some credit to George Hill. He's a decent defensive point guard.
he's a big point guard too. That's which is tough for a lot of guys. But yeah, interesting season for the Pacers so far. And they are getting some guys back. But it looks like they could maybe fight for that 8 seed in the East.
They were in the lead of the eighth on the in the eighth spot before the loss to the Suns on Tuesday, but now they've fallen out. But again, it's early. You're right there. They won't have to contend with the Knicks. The Nets will be their biggest opponent, it looks like, for that eighth seed. So who knows? And someone asked me, well, if the Pacers make it to the playoffs, don't you think Paul would try to get back? And I don't think he should rush, even at that point, for 4 or 5 games in May, because they'll end up facing either Chicago or Cleveland. And as much as they'll give them a fight, the Pacers, they won't be able to knock off those teams in a series. So again, if they make it that far, Paul should rest. He's in the first year of his max year contract. So Paul should just get healthy and come back for 2015, 2016, when that core should have one more go at it.
It seems like that would be the right move, the patient move, especially when, like you're saying, it's his first year of the max deal, so the team has invested in him as their number one guy for, at least probably 4 more seasons after this, right?
Exactly.
So definitely see that. But yeah, it should be interesting matchup. Blazers probably look like they should win it, but you never know, like you said, with the way Vogel's coaching, if he comes up with kind of a game plan, I'm just, it could be a good one.
It could be, or I put in my notes, maybe the Pacers could just repeat what they did with the Mavs, because at that point the Mavs were the highest scoring team in the NBA. But lo and behold, the Pacers won 111-100. However, the Mavericks, I'm sorry, the Blazers just seem to be good in other areas. They're solid in rebounding. They're number one in the league in rebounding. They're tremendous passers. They play with pace, but they also have efficiency, and they're getting better on defense. And although even when I was here, the bench still seems to be somewhat of the issue. But who really needs a bench when you have LaMarcus, Dame, those unguardable guys, and plus a core with Nick and Wesley? I'm calling them by their first names as if we're buddies. But we have that core that's been around together, and that's what the Pacers had. They had that core together, but it's all shattered with injuries. And it must be an exciting time to cover the team now, because that core seems to be one of the best, if not the best, in the NBA.
Yeah, it's funny how quickly, I mean, obviously, with free agency injuries, there's a lot that happened, lots of crazy stuff, but I mean, it's always a stunner sometimes how quickly things change, especially in the NBA. I mean, I remember last year when the Blazers all of a sudden burst onto the scene, and then they were playing. We were here last year basically at around the same time, and everyone was talking about how like the Pacers and the Blazers were like almost like the same type of teams. They were just
Very true.
and both very young, very talented, but yeah, it's crazy.
So, how old is LaMarcus?
I believe LaMarcus is 29.
Okay. He's still in his prime, probably on the end of it, but still prime years. Is he in his last year
Yeah, I
of
mean
contract?
he's gonna be a free agent next year, which
Whoa.
yeah, exactly. So that's always that's always fun.
Does he still have that home in L.A.?
He does still have that home in LA, and I believe he's still got the Dallas connections, so
Oh, true.
people are gonna talk. I mean, I know that last summer the Oregonian reported that that LaMarcus was wanted to stay, but we've all seen how things change with guys that say they want to be in certain places
Oh, for sure.
before their contracts end. So you never know. But yeah, that should be interesting. Yeah, I mean, if things keep going the way they are, it would make sense that the Blazers wouldn't have to worry about anything. But like you said, like we've said, you never know anything until it happens.
At least he's not doing the whole what Carmelo did in his last year at Denver, and what Kevin went through in his last year in Minnesota. I just don't want a long, drawn out storyline of will he, won't he stay. It doesn't seem like that's happening.
Yeah, I think that's what his guarantee last summer about saying that he was going to wait to sign until the following year. I think that kind of did that. I think that kind of took that out of the conversation for at least now. But if say they lose a bunch of games or something in the middle of the season, and they all of a sudden, you know, how the West is, you go on a little bit of a slump, and then all of a sudden a bunch of teams gain ground on you, and you're
and
all
KD
of a sudden
and Russell are back.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's going to be very tough. I mean, I think they have to go like 44-19 or something in the rest of their games.
If they were playing in the East, they could go 54 in the rest of the game.
But that's something to watch. I mean, like, you know, right now everything looks good, but you know, they could have a swoon in February or March, and then, you know, the pressure could be on again. But I mean, this Blazers, they look good right now.
Yes.
So that's the one thing that is keeping that from that. But
home seed for the first two rounds, I'm predicting good.
Yeah, they look like they could do. I mean, their defense, like you were saying, it looks like they could do that. But you know, how's your year been going? How's your Twitter experience been this season?
Well, you know, I always enjoy that, and this is the secret to beat reporting: interact when people tweet, and it takes you literally 2 seconds to reply. So I try to reply as much as possible. And in a game, sometimes that's difficult because, you know, you're trying to watch and pay attention and you have replies coming in. But I do try to interact as much as possible. I know that's noticed. But I just go back to what I was like as a fan. And I haven't been doing this job very long, as you know, Eric. When I was at the Columbian, that was my first time covering a pro beat. And then for these last, you know, two seasons now in Indianapolis is the first time that I get to travel as a pro beat reporter. So that's 3 years of doing this. And I've been a fan longer than I have been a pro beat reporter. So I just try to remember what I was like. Like, I'm talking like I was a kid. But I just remember I liked it when my beat reporters for my teams, you know, I'm from St. Louis, so like the Cardinals, Rams, Mizzou, blah, blah, blah. I liked it when they replied to me. So I try to remember that and reply, interact, and be myself. And sometimes you can't be yourself on Twitter, but you have to. Sometimes there are situations where people don't want you to be yourself, but you still have to.
Yeah, I think I saw one of those times. I talked about it a little bit before with someone. I think it was right after the non-grand jury indictment about Ferguson happened, and you were talking about it, and someone told you to stick to sports. That's one of those times where, you know, people don't want you to be yourself.
Yeah, I'm never shy about my St. Louis roots on Twitter, and that's, you know, part of the thing of being myself. I talk about me being a vinyl head. I love record shops, and I'll probably hit some up tomorrow before the game. I talk about my love for all things Bruno Mars, and I also talk about where I'm from, and that's St. Louis. So when that happened, that was actually, it was the Dallas game, and the indictment happened maybe in the first quarter. So it's like the end of the first quarter, and I'm actually trying to watch it on my laptop. You know, just to see it. And I know for weeks they were preparing the community that, you know, if please keep the peace. I think they were preparing us because they knew there would be no indictment. But just to see it was like a punch to your gut. And it's just it was frustrating. And I just tweeted. I don't remember my initial tweet, but it was, you know, no indictment. And I still kept it professional. I, you know, didn't use any inflammatory words against that officer or anybody. But I just expressed that, you know, I said that the indictment, the man should stay, this should have faced charges so there would be an open trial, not, you know, a secret grand jury. Mm-hmm. Not inflammatory, but just, you know, definitely my thoughts. And you're right. Somebody came back, and actually, two people had the same tweet, and it's funny. At least they're not, you know, telling me to, you know, get in the kitchen and make them a sandwich. I guess we progressed to me sticking to sports. So I got to stick to sports, and at that point, you know, I can't just stick to sports because I am human, and there's more to me than just covering a professional basketball team. There's more to life than just this basketball game that's going on right in front of me. So, you know, I replied simply, no, because if I just stick to sports, I would be forgetting that there's a whole world and reality out there outside the field of play. And there really is. So sometimes I understand that I get followed because people want to catch up with their Pacers material. But when you follow me, I also would like to think that you're getting a real person who's going to interact with you as well. And most of my interactions with Twitter have been, 99% positive. You know, there have been some trolling about, being a woman in sports, but that's been so minuscule. I mean, I can't even remember, but it's been an overwhelmingly positive experience. But when you want to talk about something that's, even remotely controversial, and don't even say political to me, because this is not a political situation. It's a human situation. Mm-hmm. But that one guy, said something, and so I replied back. I you have to be yourself, Eric. And at that point, I was fuming.
Yeah. That's, but you gotta be yourself. And sometimes if people don't want that, and that happens on Twitter but in a moment like that, especially, with you talking about your St. Louis roots, it just seems a little ignorant to tell someone to stick to sports when it is very clearly something that impacts them very closely. And also on top of that, it's a human issue. It impacts everyone. It impacts our nation and our people. So, I definitely agree that, it's not really a time to necessarily stay silent about certain things, especially in the first quarter of a basketball game. Like you say, there's a whole other world out there that is not, that doesn't confine into the 48 minutes of a game.
Well said. So when you're saying like "Viva Venezuela" on Twitter, do you get stuck to sports, Gunderson?
I don't think my personal Twitter account, which is where most of my non-NBA, because Blazer Banter is kind of, it's been passed down from you to me and all the reporters that came before you. A lot of people have associated that, and a lot of my NBA stuff will go there. And then my personal account, where I tweet most of my personal, opinions or, takes about other sports or other issues, usually goes to my personal account, which doesn't have quite the following as Blazer Banter or yourself.
You brought up – that's an interesting point. When I was in your position, I had two Twitter accounts as well, Blazer Banter, and that was – strictly Blazers, and Candace D. Buckner was the random mind of Candace. However, I still have Candace D. Buckner, and that's my Twitter handle now. And I think that's, I can see that side. Listen, you are the Blazers reporter. You are the Pacers reporter. I come here for Pacers information, Blazers information. Let's just keep it professional there. You have a personal account, blah, blah, blah. I understand all that. However, there are some times where matters transcend just the normal protocol.
Yes, the quote unquote professionalism. Yeah, there's some times where maybe we don't have to talk about sports. I think when the indictment happened, I didn't even watch any sports. I just didn't want to deal with it. So I can't imagine what it would have been like to have to watch, cover a game when that's going on. I didn't even want to watch any sports. I was just watching. Yeah.
And I never put any of my political views on Candace D. Buckner at Candace D. Buckner or anything that I may believe in or any legislature that's been passed in Oregon. No, I never, if I ever have any comment on any of that, that's going on Facebook, on my personal Facebook page. So I understand the professionalism and watch what you say. I totally get that. But, there are some times where you can still be professional, but also multi-dimensional.
Exactly. We're not just exactly. It's our job. It's not who we are. That's always important to remember for us as and for our own sanity, I suppose, and then also maybe for Twitter out there, we do stuff and care about stuff that aren't happening right now a lot of times. So, or that are happening right now and that are not about what you follow us for. So that's just part of it. But thanks for talking about that. No, it was just interesting to me when that guy replied to you and I saw that you replied to him back. And I just thought it was, one of those funny moments that, just kind of happened on Twitter. And, it was that. So, yeah, I appreciate talking about that. Have you spent your time so far back in the Northwest, spending time coming over from Phoenix?
Would I be cliche if I said I went to Powell's and already had a food truck meal? Would that be cliche?
It would be, but that's part of the Portland experience is, that cliches come from, good things,
sometimes. So when I played basketball, you didn't call me.
I know. I went out to go play basketball. I'm sorry I didn't call you. It was a rough game out there. I haven't played in 2 months, so maybe I didn't want you to see my game and how bad it had been.
Oh, you should see mine. I haven't played since Portland.
That's so long.
That's 2 years.
Wow.
That's 2 years.
Well, okay. Well, we should have gotten a game going next time. Well, next time you guys are out here in Portland.
Which will be next year.
Next year, gosh.
I would be retired. I should retire now. I'm 34 years old, for crying out loud. How many 34-year-old women are out there trying to play with? How old are you?
25.
Give me a break. You're a kid. I can't play with you.
Yeah.
My old knees can't keep up with you.
Yeah. I just need to
have a good game. By the way, listeners, EG, he knows the game. He's a good basketball player.
Thanks, CB. I appreciate that. I know that people needed to know about.
They need to know this.
They need to know about my game.
Come at him, Portland. Hit him up on Blazer Banter and invite him to your pickup games. He will ball out of control.
I'm
gonna go up now, like crazy now.
Yeah, let's. We'll set. At me and I'll see if I can come to your game. As long as it's not. Noon ball. Take me to your noon ball, Portland. I want to play. Or Vancouver.
Yeah. Vancouver, yes. Forgot about the Couve.
The Couve, of course. Yeah, Clark County. Candace, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. It was really cool to learn a little bit more about the Pacers and how things are going, that bizarro season, like you've said, and also just catch up with you. You miss you, obviously, from my days as an intern when I was a young intern and hanging out with Candace when she was the beat reporter for the Columbian.
The evolution of Eric Gunderson from intern to beat reporter extraordinaire.
The evolution of Candace Bugner from the Columbian to big star.
Superstar, son!
Yeah, I know. I know who I'm dealing with right now. All right, well, thanks for coming on. It was great talking, and I'll see you at the Moda Center on Thursday night.
Wait. You'll see me at Moda Center. No the, right?
What?
You can't say the. There's no the in Moda Center. It's just Moda Center.
Wow.
Isn't it?
I guess. I wasn't there. That was before my time back on the beat was the Moda Center naming rights press conference. So I never got the tutorial on
not
the.
Not to say the.
Okay.
Even if it makes sense, like I'll see you at the Moda Center, which will make sense. Like I'll see you at the coffee shop or I'll see you at the hotel. No, I don't even say the even in that sense. I'll see you at Moda Center. It's that serious. No, really, it's that serious.
My bad.
Chris McGowan will come after you if you say the.
Okay. Well, Chris, I'm sorry. I understand the branding purposes, but I have to say, all right. Well, I will see you tomorrow at Moda Center.
Boom. There we go.
All right.
Good talking to you, EG.
Well, folks, thanks for joining us. It was fun to have Candace on. And the song that we had on to intro us in was her choice. It was Uptown Funk by Bruno Mars. All right. Well, look forward to having you listen next time on the Blazer Banter podcast. Do 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 do